Chapter 25. Your lethal oath was not reflected in any more general solemnity in the Mithraeum. Despite the apocalypse you had suffered, not much seemed to change. Everyone was far too busy to care. The next time you sat down to talk to teacher, your heart in your throat and your tea stubbornly undrunk, he did not even mention it. Surely he knew. Surely he must have known everything. You were too prideful to beg salvation, but too stupid not to blurt as a diversion from your own panic. Lord, I saw the saint of duty kissing the body of Kithareia the First. Part of his biscuit dropped off in his tea. He looked at it with genuine consternation, then at you with equally genuine consternation, then back at the biscuit. Harrowhark, I hate to ask, but are you certain? Even God distrusted you. Teacher, I swear by the locked tomb. I wouldn't swear by that in this instance, he murmured, and took his dented teaspoon to fish out a quivering and deliquescent glob of ginger biscuit. Then he looked at you. There were sleep marks beneath his eyes. He was not wearing his halo of infant phalanxes and pearl-coloured leaves, and his hair looked only hastily brushed. He ran one hand through it, as though conscious of your critical gaze. Well, he said eventually, that's unfortunate. Is it not a sin? You knew you sounded like a quisling. You knew you sounded like a prattling gossip monger. What you really wanted to say was, Lord, I was in my bathtub and he drank my wards dry of thanergy and I burst his eyeballs before he could destroy me. I have not slept in 48 hours. I asked Mercy Morn how best to stimulate my own cortisol to keep me awake. Lord, she did, and I fear I have done something to my hypothalamus. Don't you think it's strange? Only in that the closest thing to interest Autus ever showed in anybody was in Pyrrha, and in the criminals he hunted, said the Emperor of the Nine Houses. When he kicked that Edenite commander out an airlock, it was like seeing a man on his wedding day. Not exactly romance, though. Harrow, over 10,000 years I've known that man, and he is legendarily unamorous. I have watched 6 other lictors carry out a myriad's worth of inadvisable love affairs with one another, because it is a very long time to be alone. But never him. He was unassailable. I won't believe he's doing anything to Kithareia. Everyone liked her. He liked her. But there's a huge leap between liking and corpse compulsion. You stared, feeling mildly drunk and unutterably pitiful at your repeatedly uneaten biscuit. Teacher said quietly, "You must think us all a depraved set of immortal criminals." You said nothing. He pressed, "Harrow, do something normal. Learn how to make a meal. Read a book. Go ahead and prepare. Our lives revolve around us all preparing. But take the time to rest. Have you slept lately?" It was the first time you realised God could not understand you. And nobody cared. And nobody paid you the slightest bit of attention, including the saint of duty, who was as whole and as normal and as two-eyed as ever. You had not held out much hope that you had done anything permanent. The only surety that it had even happened was the lasting smell of damp on your carpets. So you went to Ianthe, and you asked her how to make soup.
"Oh, it's easy," said the Princess of Ida breezily.
Despite Augustine's increasing critiques, she showed no signs of temper, as might have been anticipated. In fact, she seemed to get more carefree with every failure.
"You cut up an onion, burn it at the bottom of the pot, put in a few vegetables, and then some meat. It won't taste like anything, so put in a few teaspoons of salt, and then it'll taste like a few teaspoons of salt. In obedience to the Emperor, you made soup. You had never seen anybody cook before. You did not like it. There were technical manuals on the subject in a kitchen drawer, and you pored over those, rather than attempting Ianthe's air on the theme of salt. By the evening of the third day after your interrupted bath, you had not slept for 86 hours, but you had read a book, and you had made soup 3 times. During sleeping hours, you lay beneath your bed in the dark, hardly breathing, staring up at the dustless ribs of the steel mattress slats. You prayed to the corpse of the locked tomb, or you said to yourself, "Oh God, oh God, oh God," until it slurred together on your tongue and joined the orchestra of whispers that thrummed between your ears, waiting for the assault that did not come. It was also on the third day, post-Autus, that the tension in the Mithraeum gained weight and sharpness, like salt water forming crystals. This had nothing to do with you. It was the countdown that Augustine had issued to Ianthe. 5 more days, he had said to her. You knew, because he had said it over breakfast, right in front of you and Mercy. You've 5 days left, my chick. If you don't start using that sword arm properly by then, I shan't bother to teach you a damn thing more. I'm not interested in charity cases. If I were, I'd be teaching Harrow. In another lifetime, you might have been icily furious, or at the very least, chagrined. In this one, you were simply looking at your knife and your fork and your spoon and trying to remember which did what. The spoon, with its concave pit, was probably for transferring liquids. In its back, you caught sight of Ianthe, who had put her colourless chin in her hand and was leaning her head into it, as though listening without much interest to a bedtime story. "As you will it, brother." Everyone was snappish and cross, except Ianthe, and except you. You drifted through the Mithraeum with your great sword on your back and your hand never far from the end, pommel of your rapier. And you made soup. 2 days after Augustine's ultimatum, perhaps impressed with your newfound understanding of soup, or hungry for social cohesion, a frazzled god asked you to make everyone dinner. You opened more of the recipe books. You spent some time cleaning out your weights and measures and picking through the warehouse-sized supply rooms for the most appropriate ingredients. And for a long time, you locked yourself in the bathroom to do what you had to do. 126 hours. You no longer felt pain. Sometimes your jaw rattled to itself, but it was almost musical. That night you made soup more carefully than ever. The recipe said it had to cook for a long time. You paced up and down the kitchen, distracted and startled by lights as the air grew steamy and a little sweet-smelling. When the alarm sounded to say it was done, you nearly screamed. It took you a while to turn it off. You tested the result of your labour, after a moment's hesitation. You still hated strong flavours, and it took you a while to understand tastes. The soup did not taste like anything very specific, but you did not add Ianthe's teaspoons of salt. You transferred it to a big tureen, and when you all sat down around the table, the Emperor served everyone, like he always did. On those first few days in the Mithraeum, you had been terrified by the idea of the god of the 9 houses serving you food. But it was just his way. He was pleased with you. He smiled that rueful, dented smile, and he rested his hand on your shoulder very lightly when he filled your bowl. "As I said, Harrow Hark," he said, "make a meal. Read a book. It's the little things." There were 2 days left before Ianthe's deadline, and all the lictors ate with a distinct lack of relish. You watched Ianthe take a spoonful of food as you struggled with your cutlery. Your soup did not look like a bad effort, and you had been vaguely proud of it. The thick, translucent gold whiteness of the pot liquor, the unburnt onion floating in white stratified wedges, the candy orange of the stored carrots. You had read up on vegetables carefully, trying to overcome your aversion to their colours. You had not wanted anything that might dissolve entirely in the soup over the length of cooking called for. Needs salt, was Ianthe's judgment. Too much water, but not a bad effort, said Augustine, with forced jollity. Broth needs to thicken over time, Harrow. You had let it thicken for hours, then added a great deal of water in a panic. Do not get me wrong, sis. Eating a new cook's food after 10,000 years is frankly exciting. Let me give you a list of my favourite meals so that you can get them interestingly wrong. The saint of duty ate your soup at a stolid, uninterested, mechanical pace. You had noticed at previous dinners that he did not like some particular vegetables, so you had put them all in. Deprived of solid choices, he was mostly drinking stock. God had taken a spoonful, eaten it, then put down the spoon, then taken a discreet sip of water. He said nothing. The next 60 seconds were occupied with the wet, semi-ashamed sounds of people eating soup.
If we're going to do these awful shared meals, at least someone provide conversation, said Mercy waspishly.
She was removing thick pieces of root vegetable and eating them delicately off her fork.
I can't bear to sit here and eat mediocre food in silence. I can do that by myself.
You said, after a moment, to peel up the edges of your words.
Is it mediocre, elder sister? I followed a recipe.
Cassiopeia's. Now there was a woman who could cook, said Augustine, and his granite-coloured eyes grew soft and nostalgic in his long, hawk-featured face.
Not without injuring herself, mind. John, do you remember that time she took half her finger off getting the meat out of that coconut? She didn't tell anybody until after we'd eaten the meal. That's a lesson for you, Harrow Hark. Confess first thing, before we find a finger in the soup.
You flinched, then tried to smile. Perhaps that was called for. Ianthe looked at the expression on your face and shuddered visibly.
What's the meat in here flavouring the broth? If there's chunks, it's all rendered down.
You closed your eyes and tried to think. It was so difficult. You so badly wanted to sleep. You were doing so many things at once. Your sole remaining powers of concentration were given over to this moment. For a second or two, you forgot the word that you were looking for. It was on the tip of your tongue, while you were building, minutely, stromal cell by stromal cell.
Marrow, you said.
The saint of duty exploded outward as your construct emerged from his abdomen. Your soup was watery and mediocre, as soup went, but as a delivery method for gelid explosives, marrow rendered through so much water as to not pass comment, it was perfect. Half a dozen arms shattered him in the soft electric light from the overhead panels. You let out your breath, and coalescing scythes destroyed intestines, lungs, heart. Then you fired upward toward the brain. And God said, stop! The world slowed down. Augustine and Mercy Morn stopped, arrested in the act of half rising from their seats. Ianthe stopped, left arm paused, outflung to shield her face. You stopped, sitting upright in your chair, your bones somehow rigid and still, and your flesh chilly and rigid around those bones. The shrapnel spray from the saint of duty did not stop.
It cascaded across the table like the crest of a pink waterfall, pitter-pattering down on bowls and the tablecloth and the polished dark surface of the wood. But what remained of him stopped too, half man, half rupture, his prurient details hot and white, naked insides clothed with the sinus-drying burst of the power of God. The Emperor of the Nine Houses, the Resurrection, the First Reborn, sat at the end of the table, his plain face splattered with gore, and his eyes were the death of light. The Necrolord Prime said very calmly, 10,000 years since I've eaten human being, Harrow, and I didn't really want an encore. Now tell me what you have done. Your body was unyielding, but your mouth had purchase. You said,
I reconfigured a clump of marrow stem cells into sesamoid bone. From the sesamoid bone, I made a construct.
Harrow Hark, he said, you cannot have perceived foreign bone marrow within the body of a lictor. I'm not sure Mercy could perceive it with her arms draped around Ortus the whole time.
The cells weren't foreign.
What?
I sectioned my tibia for the soup, you said.
God's eyes closed very briefly. He pushed his bowl another fraction away. You stared down the table at him, at the blank, remote faces of your two nominal teachers, at the frozen, ivory stillness of Ianthe, her hair now whitish-pink, at space outside the window, where the asteroids themselves seemed to hang in tranquilized arrest. He said,
You must know that I won't let either of you kill the other before my very eyes, Harrow.
He attacked me in my rooms. He drained my personal wards.
Coming from the saint of duty, that's a compliment.
You said, Lord, I am hunted. I perish.
Harrow.
I don't come to you as Harrow Hark the First,
your mouth said.
I come to you as a supplicant. I can't live like this. Lord, do I displease you that you shield him and not me? I understand that I am a sharpened twig beside your keenest sword, but why do you suffer this twig to live? I can't live this way. I cannot live this way. I have nowhere to go. I have nobody to turn to. I am a nonsense.
You looked at each other down that long, bloody table.
God said, Harrow Hark, when was the last time you slept?
It was with all the dignity of the locked tomb, the chill of the stone that had been rolled and of the bones that had been laid and of the still salt water that shimmered before the whitened monument where your holy monster lay, that you said,
6 days ago.
The Emperor of the Nine Houses stood. The spell, whatever it had been, dropped like a white sun setting. Your body collapsed back into your chair, the construct gamely clambering out of the saint of duty, dwindled to a powder of pink dust. The shard you had been driving up the cervical vertebrae to the base of the spine and the brain within its casing simply disappeared, destroyed or removed, you could not tell. The concatenation of Ortus the First's insides, laced and crocheted over the dinner table, sizzled away to a soft mist. Everyone's breath spewed from their lungs in one unholy gasp. Ortus's hands flew to his middle. The Emperor did not give anyone time to react further. He said evenly,
Dinner is over. Let us leave the table. Ianthe, take your sister to bed.
Everyone began clattering out of their chairs in a wild scraping of wood and tile. Augustine said, My lord, and God said,
Go, just go.
You felt strange and unreal as a white-lipped Ianthe hauled you up from your seat. The skin she touched was merely a thin and pervious netting keeping in your meat, which consisted of 10,000 spiders. She slung your arm across her shoulders as though you were an invalid. Perhaps you were. Your legs did not feel correct. Your eldest sister, looking distinctly green around the gills and checking long strands of her overripe rose hair for globs, had also risen. But the Emperor said, "You, stay," and she froze. There was no thought in you of fighting Ianthe as she walked you away. You could have gone meekly to the slaughter without a muzzle or a leash. Behind you, the kindly prince was saying in far more ominous tones than you had ever heard him use, "6 days, no sleep. She still manages a full skeleton commencement from diluted marrow. What else have you failed to see, Mercy Morn?" You were already at the door when her peevish response came.
"But this is insane! She's only 9 years old!"
The saints of duty and patience were out in the corridor. If either had wanted to run you through, you could not have stopped them. You looked at them despite Ianthe urging you away. At Augustine, looking as though he had seen the ghost of someone he did not particularly like, and a tortoise. Ianthe kept trying to turn you to face forward, but you kept watching even as she hustled you down the corridor. You saw Augustine fumble for a cigarette, light it with the little silver arc lighter he kept in his breast pocket, and pass it silently to his brother Lictor. Ortus was impassive. There was not a trace of blood on his clothing. There was not a stray lump of viscera upon the shabby shirt, nor on the mother-of-pearl cloak still slung over his shoulder. There was no betrayal of any emotion on his face, not the surprise that had dawned over his heavy-lidded eyes earlier, nor anger, nor even dissatisfaction. He caught your gaze. You held his. And the saint of duty lifted his lit cigarette to you in an unmistakable salute.